Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Dr. Kevin Robertson. It is November 1st, 2017. And it's hard to believe that we're in November and we're getting ready to celebrate Thanksgiving in about 4 weeks. So hopefully you made your plans and you're going to spend $100,000 flying to your in-laws that you don't like. Anyway, today I want to introduce you to Mary. Now, Mary has been going to our church about a year.
A little over a year.
And she comes to the Saturday night service with her husband, Matt. And so, first of all, welcome to the podcast. And we want to talk about, where we were born, your growing up, and then your travels. I want to talk about that. So, where were you born?
In Canada.
Canada?
Saskatchewan, which is kind of the middle of nowhere.
Okay, so every Democrat would love to live in Canada right now.
Probably.
And so you grew up there? Did you grow up in the church?
Yes.
Okay.
I was born and raised on a farm outside of a town of 400 people.
A literal farm?
Literally a farm.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
You had animals and stuff?
We had animals and stuff, yes.
Oh, that's crazy.
We were grain farmers and we had cows and
so
pigs
you worked,
and chickens.
So you actually worked on the farm?
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Until I was 16, we were on the farm. And the town was a town of 400 people. I think it had 7 or 8 churches. And
okay.
We were members of the Lutheran Church.
Okay.
And because it was a very small town, we were very involved in the church. So
your parents were like on the board or elders of the church or just involved?
Yeah, all of that. Sometimes my dad did preaching when we didn't have a preacher. Sometimes I became the substitute organist at probably 14 years old.
You play the organ too?
I did, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So do you remember when you received Christ in your life, or is it just that was part of your life?
It was just, yeah.
Part of
who you
are.
It was just part of my life. I was baptized. I was confirmed.
Confirmed the whole thing.
I taught Sunday school. Yeah, the whole thing.
And so when you became, did you have any type of rebelliousness in your life when you were junior high or high school, or were you just this perfect little daughter?
I think I appear to be a perfect little daughter. There was certainly some rebellion.
Okay.
But I still, my parents' rule was, you either go to church on Sunday morning or you clean out a pig pen.
Oh, good night. That's
so I went to church on Sunday mornings.
Man, my church would be packed when we lived on a farm.
Yeah.
wait until your son grows up and complains about how.
I know.
And then you're just going, hey, when I was your age.
That's right.
We had to do that.
I slopped pig pens. That's right.
Let alone clean up your room, kid.
Yeah.
Okay. So did you have the calling to be a school teacher then in high school?
No.
So after high school, did you have any idea what you wanted to do?
Well, I decided to be a teacher in my last year of high school. But I can be very stubborn and yeah, very stubborn. And so my mom was a teacher,
right.
And I thought, I watched her get abused by children, and I was always like, you can't pay me enough. Mom, you're smart. Why don't you get a different job? And in the meantime, as I was saying all of this, all of my part-time jobs involved teaching. So I taught Sunday school, I taught figure skating, I taught dancing, I taught swimming lessons.
I would assume, I never, did you play hockey because you're from Canada?
Ringette.
Is it called ringette?
Yes, it's like hockey, but with no blade on the stick and there's a ring.
Really?
Yes.
See, I'm learning something now.
Yeah.
Because when you said teaching ice skating, or
ice dancing.
And style, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, of course, you're from Canada. Because all the good hockey players are from Canada, according to Jennifer.
That's true.
And so when you graduated from college, what college did you go to?
The University of Regina.
Okay. Now, in the pre-interview, you didn't really want to talk about what university, because it was a church podcast. But pronounce it again. The church, the
Regina.
University of Regina.
Regina, yes.
Slightly
unfortunately named, but Regina is the capital of Saskatchewan. That's how it's pronounced. Some people say Regina, but it's not.
Oh, you must have been made fun of. Were you?
I have a good sense of humor. So I usually beat people to the punch. Yeah.
Okay, so when you graduated from the university, and I won't even say it because I don't want to mispronounce it.
Yeah.
Then you decide, you graduate with a teaching degree, I assume. And then you go, okay, I want to teach. And tell me how that process, your first teaching job.
So I started looking for a job, and of course there were lots of jobs in small town southern Saskatchewan, but I wasn't, that's where I'd just been from, and I was a very reluctant farm kid.
Okay.
I was the oldest, so my dad was like, you know, gave me all the toughest farm jobs, and I always tried to bargain with my sister to get her to do them, and I would stay inside and like cook or clean, and I read fashion magazines, and I was fascinated with New York and Tokyo and Milan, and and I really just thought living on the farm was just holding me back. So when I
Green Acres, do you remember Green Acres? New York, no. It's a show called Green Acres. It's the same thinking. Okay.
Yeah. So I thought it was kind of holding me back. So once I graduated from college, I really wanted to like spread my wings and fly. And so I looked for jobs in the cities, like in Regina, in Saskatoon, in Edmonton, in Calgary.
Okay.
I had some interviews, but mostly people were like, look, you're a brand new teacher. The chances of you getting a job in one of these city boards is low.
Low chance.
So, you know, just go do 2 years somewhere else. And but I really didn't want to work in a small town in Saskatchewan. I'd left that behind. So I got offered that there was at this job kind of fair, I guess, there was a school district in northern Saskatchewan that worked with Aboriginals, Native American people. And so I threw my resume in, and they actually interviewed me and hired me for a job in northern Saskatchewan. And a lot of my friends and family thought I was a little crazy because it was remote. I mean, like, if you started at the U.S. border and drove straight at like 60 miles per hour for about 13 hours, that's where I lived.
And was that some type of reservation or?
Kind of.
Mostly.
It was all Native Americans.
Native Americans.
Yeah, it was a former stop on a fur trade road.
Okay. So I'm assuming, you taught there 2 years.
2 years.
So I would assume the winters were cold.
Yeah, but Saskatchewan winters are cold anyway.
Well, the thing is, it's out.
But it was far north. It was remote. It was like, this was kind of almost pre-cell phone days.
Okay.
So, you know, you could drive for an hour and see nothing. Maybe a moose, you know. But
you taught there for 2 years. Was it a good experience for you?
Yeah. I didn't want to stay for that much longer, I don't think. But no, it was a great experience because I think the benefit of working in that community is that they really gave you a lot of freedom, you know, because it was hard to get good teachers up there. And a lot of us teachers were brand new. It was our first teaching gig. You know, you leave college and you're like, you're excited to change the world, right? So there was a bunch of us there that were trying new things, new programs. I started a student council from scratch, which ended up being very successful. So I learned a lot, and that was awesome. And I think my parents met whilst living in Nigeria. My mom is from Britain. I'd always, you know, we grew up with National Geographic magazines and aunts and uncles that we'd never met from England. And my great-grandparents had immigrated to Canada from Denmark, and we had still a family there. So I'd always, and we had National Geographics and African masks hanging on our walls and stuff. So I was always very interested in traveling, but I knew as a teacher I could probably not afford to travel, and I think it was going to that new community. I also didn't think I was brave enough to go overseas by myself, you know, but living in that community, like, I might as well have been overseas.
Yeah, it kind of built courage in you.
Yeah.
And also, you just said in the beginning of the podcast that you grew up in the Lutheran church. So when you moved, did you find a church in this place?
I did, but the only church was a Catholic church.
Okay.
So
you went from Lutheran to going to a Catholic church in 2 years. And you weren't Catholic, right?
No.
And so did you take communion?
Yes.
That's what I love about
I feel like I squared this with God. Like, God, you know, I was like, I'm a Christian.
I totally
serious.
Yep. I believe in the open communion.
And it's funny. So I started taking communion, and I got to then I got to know the... I think I made the mistake of revealing that I could play the piano. So the priest then asked if I could play a couple songs on the piano.
Okay.
So then I ended up playing songs on the piano at the Catholic Church. And then I was still taking communion. And then I started feeling guilty. Because I'm not actually Catholic. So I confessed to the priest. And the priest... I was all prepared with my, you know, defense of, like, I prayed to God about this. And, and the priest was like, Mary, it's fine. You have my blessing.
Oh, that's cool.
And then I was like, okay.
But you were playing the piano.
Well, yeah.
Of course, yeah. Blessing. Okay, so then 2 years... so you taught there 2 years, and you decided, okay, is this where you begin to get the courage to say, I can move out of this state, I can move out of this country, I mean?
Yeah, yeah. A friend of mine who, from my time in college, who I might have had a mini crush on.
Okay.
I found out, he was very cute. I found out that he got a job teaching in Beijing, and...
Wow.
It blew my mind. And
did you want to get a teaching job in Beijing to see that little crush get bigger?
Not quite, but I was really, after 2 years in the Lush, I was feeling like I was ready to move on. And I found out he got this teaching job in Beijing, so
right.
I contacted him and said, how did you do that? And are there other teaching jobs, other places in the world? And he said, yeah, there's international schools all over the world. And you've got some experience now.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to go to a job fair. And they have these job fairs specifically for international schools. And I jumped on that. And I went to a job fair in Ontario. I flew there for the weekend and interviewed with probably... 12 different schools.
All these 12 different schools are all over the world.
Yeah.
Okay.
And after all the interviews, I ended up...
Do you remember some of them that you interviewed?
Well, I got 4 job offers.
Okay, which were... What are the 4?
One was in Mexico, a city in Mexico.
Okay.
Not Mexico City, but a city in Mexico. One was in Quito, Ecuador.
Ecuador would be cool.
Yeah.
One
was in the United Arab Emirates in Abu Dhabi. And then one was Kuwait City, Kuwait. And you had about, 24 hours to make a decision.
Okay, so out of those 4 options, the options I would eliminate Kuwait. I would eliminate Ecuador. I forget the other one. Mexico, I think I would.
So the Mexico job intrigued me, but I think a year's salary was $17,000.
Okay.
And I had about $36,000 Canadian of student loan debt.
Okay.
And everyone was like, but the cost of living is low. And I'm like, but still.
Yeah.
And
how low is it? So which one did you pick?
I picked Kuwait because it paid the most money. So I think Kuwait was maybe, $35,000 tax-free.
Okay.
Tax-free, no rent, no apartment, no expenses.
Okay, so you picked Kuwait more of a financial...
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to travel, and I didn't know where, and I didn't know enough about...
But what's interesting, too, because we know each other pretty well, you were kind of seeking other religions, too, not just Christianity, but kind of curious about other religions, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I have a natural curiosity, but I wasn't seeking something different, but when I... made the decision to go to Kuwait.
Right.
Then, of course, I started reading up about Islam. And I'm like, my background is history and English education. So I started reading about Islam. And the more I read about it, the more I liked it.
Right.
And I was really intrigued by it. And as I said before, I've been a Christian all my life. And you hear people like, God, really got me through this. Or like, I heard God speak to me, or the power of prayer.
Right.
And I was kind of like, I don't know. I like church, but.
Right. But you never had this experience God told me and God said that. Because I look at other pastors like Rick Warren, and he said, the Lord told me. And he's had a Bible study of 6 people that I'm going to have a church of 30,000. And you're going, why can't the Lord say that to me?
Exactly.
30,000 would be a headache, but at least 1,000 would be nice. But yeah, I totally relate where you're just going, I just want, other people are experiencing, why isn't God talking to me?
Yeah.
So then, do you remember getting on that plane and saying goodbye to your parents?
So my parents were on vacation at the time. So I remember saying goodbye to some family friends who took me to their
They were on vacation?
Yes.
Okay. They didn't say, okay, look, we got a cat's on vacation.
I mean, I think they... No. No. That's bearing in mind, my parents met in Nigeria.
Okay.
You know, they're an adventurous.
So you just said goodbye to the next door neighbor.
Kind of.
Stuff like that. It's like, were you nervous flying out there?
No, I was so excited.
Really?
I was ready to get
you
on
never
with my life.
Second guessed it. Because when I went to Southern Sudan on a mission trip, I was second guessing the whole thing, and I was only there for 2 weeks.
I was so ready. Was just ready to.
So who picked you up at the airport?
The principal of the school.
Okay.
And the superintendent. And
did you had no place to live, or did they provide
no
a
we
place?
Already had a part yeah they provided
okay.
an apartment they we already had an apartment. I remember getting to the apartment, they had a little like care package of like
oh,
some
cool.
first foods and
okay.
shampoo and whatever soap
right.
and stuff like that. And I was so excited. And the first couple of days, or really first week or two, maybe were just really fun. Just getting to like
I
a new experience,
yeah,
you know, like
that.
It was, and it was so different, right, than anything I'd ever seen before, like desert and men, you know, wearing dishdasha, like
right.
white, long white robes and head coverings
did
and women
have,
wearing.
Did you have to wear the head no. covering?
No, we just had
okay.
to wear very conservative dress, but
okay.
But even that, you know, that even that was fun, like
okay.
to go shopping for like, you know, shirts that covered the elbow
yeah.
and.
Because that would be a conservative. I'm assuming a dress below the knee.
Yeah.
And sleeves.
Covering
the elbow.
Yeah.
And then high neck thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so you bought all these conservative clothes that any parent would just love you for.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, so how did it go? How did your first couple months going teaching there?
Terrible. I went there with...
When did the bubble burst?
Yeah.
Was it a week into that?
Probably about 2 weeks in.
2 weeks, it just burst.
Yeah.
Okay.
The very short version, of course everything's complicated,
right.
but the very short version is that one of the new male teachers quite liked me.
Had a crush on
me. Had a bit of a crush on me.
Okay.
I was just soaking up the newness, and
right.
So I kind of like said, hey, just back off. Like, I don't
right.
dislike you,
yeah.
but I'm not interested in a boyfriend right now
right.
or a relationship. I just want to...
Well, especially in Kuwait. I mean, you know...
I don't
want to
get settled,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah,
I just left my whole life behind, like...
yeah.
Chill. And his aunt and uncle happened to work at the school and had worked at the school for a long time,
okay.
and they were in charge of the social committee. So then another new girl came, and he set his eyes on her.
Right.
And because he was pretty open about courting me early,
okay.
then he had to kind of get rid of me in order to court her.
Oh, okay.
So very suddenly, I was not invited to any of the social events at the beginning of the year anymore.
See, don't you look back at that and think that's kind of chicken?
I thought it was chicken at the time. But there was not much I could do about it.
So now, let alone you were in this country that you've never been in, and now this knucklehead does something, and then you feel totally isolated,
more isolated
than ever before. So were you connecting on the phone? I think you were telling me you could not even have a cell phone.
No, because it took, you know, we didn't have, it took us a while to get our, like, proper working documents.
Okay.
I mean, we came in on visas, but they were temporary.
Right.
So you needed permanent... You needed a more permanent visa in order to get a cell phone, to rent a car.
Okay.
So, you know, everything that first month at least was, like, for work in the morning, a school bus
right.
came and picked up all of the teachers.
Right.
Because, so, it was very hard to get to know people.
Right.
So you relied on your colleagues.
Yeah.
And I was kind of left out of a lot of those. And I had a roommate. I lived with her. And she was invited to things, and
right.
I wasn't. So I'd watch her get ready and go out to some social event, and I would just sit at home with a book or, like, the two local channels.
Do you remember the lowest point?
Yeah. I mean, looking back on it now, I'm sure I was clinically depressed.
Right.
Because I remember one morning getting up. It was school morning. I remember getting up, going to the bathroom, sitting down on the toilet, and just sitting there. And just not even just having the desire to get up.
Oh.
Like, I remember thinking, like, is this what adulthood is like? Is this,
right.
Is this what life is? Is this, you know, like, all of this time, you know, you're going to school and you're getting a career and then it's supposed to be the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Like, total freedom and enjoyment.
Right.
And fulfilling your dreams.
And to me, it just felt like that. Like, I remember just saying, you know, eventually, obviously, I did get up and get dressed and go to work. And I remember on the way to work just thinking, like, God, if you could just let me get hit by a bus today, like, that'd be okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know what there was to live for.
Right.
Like, for what? Why am I here?
Well, yeah.
What's the purpose?
And so obviously, God did not answer that prayer.
No. Thankfully.
You know, you can thank God for unanswered prayer. But there gets to a point where you decided, I need to give back with God. I need to find a church.
I don't think consciously it ever got to that point. Like, I don't... Yeah, I don't think a lot. I don't know. I think I was hurting so much emotionally and probably also then physically that I'm not sure I was really consciously functioning very well.
Right.
I remember thinking, like, you should be able to handle this. You should be able to handle this, but not being able to and really feeling defeated by that.
Right.
And kind of luckily... whatever it was, you know, 2 months in or something like that, I got a cell phone and I got a car, and which gave me a bit of freedom. And I went to some social event that maybe like everyone was invited to or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I met some teachers at a different school.
Okay.
And I'm pretty naturally outgoing. So I met some teachers at a different school. And I guess maybe, I don't know, I was talking about my school or something, and they were like, well, come hang out with us.
Okay.
And one of the girls who I met had said something about, like, church. And I said, church? You go to church here? Because it didn't occur to me to look for a church living in Kuwait. Just it hadn't occurred to me. And she said, oh, yeah, there's a little chapel on the American Embassy compound. I go every Friday. Because that's the weekend.
That's when they met on Fridays?
Yeah, I usually go every Friday. And
it
was getting close to December, I guess. And she had told me that. And I said, you know, oh, maybe sometime I could come with you. And she said, sure, anytime, just let me know.
Okay.
And obviously she gave me her phone number. And I think, like I said, it was getting closer to Christmas. And I've always loved Christmas. Christmas in the church.
Right,
like, to me, it's a beautiful holiday. And I was, you know, of course, feeling homesick and just sad and whatever. So I thought, you know, it might be nice to go to a church again.
Yeah.
So I texted her and she said, sure, meet me at the American Embassy. And, I credit that with, like, turning my life around.
Because do you remember, so I think you were telling me you had to forfeit your
passport.
To go on the embassy church. So tell us, how was it like your first Friday there?
Yeah, so, it was very official because it was the American Embassy compound.
Right.
So you had to, like, give over your passport and your identity card to get onto the compound. And it was, like, you know, a nondescript building. It wasn't a special, like, church, but inside there was a chapel. And I remember... I will always remember walking in the door, and I really felt like I heard God's voice just say, welcome home.
So, and this is the first time you've ever experienced hearing
God. I've never heard God speak to me before. No.
Not only did you hear it, did you, I'm just asking, did you feel it? Did you get it? Was it more of an experiential
part of your life? Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to describe it. Maybe felt kind of this wave wash over me and this, like, weight lift from me.
Okay.
And it was a sudden, like, kind of light bulb that said, of course, you're not alone.
Right.
Like, all this time I'd been fixating on how I'd left my parents behind and my sister and the rest of my family. And I had a dog who I loved dearly.
Right.
And I left my dog at home with my parents. And I'd left all of my friends. And I had nothing in Kuwait. And, it was like this light bulb, like, you're not alone.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
You know, like,
So that was almost to the point where you developed hope.
Yeah.
I would say in this situation. So going back where the teaching ended in Kuwait, now you would think, and I'm talking to the audience here, you would think after this horrible experience in Kuwait that you had to hear from God himself because you prayed that the bus would hit you, you know, at a point of your lowest point, And there's other stuff you told me, you know, that it goes real deep.
Mm.
So you don't decide, I need to fly and get my tail back to Canada and live at home for a while, right?
No.
Okay. Which the lesson really wasn't learned. Right? So was there a job fair in Kuwait or to get your second job?
So
your third job, your third teaching.
Yeah. I intended to stay in Kuwait.
Okay.
And, but I, some point, I just had to listen to my body because I remember telling myself, like, you could do another year. And I remember my body physically shuddering.
Really?
And then I was like, okay, no, you gotta go.
Okay.
Like, even if it's not smart, it doesn't look good on the resume, you gotta go. So I finished out my contract there or was finishing it. And so I went to a job fair in the United Arab Emirates and got offered some jobs, but wasn't excited about any of them. They were all kind of still in the region.
Okay.
And I knew I needed something different. And I did talk about going home, but my parents were like, well, you need a plan. You know, you can't just come home.
You're very strong, aren't you?
They're tough, yeah. But I also, like, I wasn't, you know, like, I didn't know what I didn't want to go back to small town Saskatchewan. Like,
right,
that wasn't
right.
my solution either.
Right.
So then I got to know some other colleagues at work eventually, some older people, and they said, you know, there's a big world out there. There's lots of international schools. This is not the example.
Right.
This
okay.
school is not the example of international schools. There's lots of better ones out there.
Right.
So I just signed up on an international teaching website and I was praying really hard to God. I mean, again, like I'd been to church all my life, but I never knelt beside my bed and prayed, but...
Did you do it? I did.
No. Oh, in that time, I sure did.
Okay.
I was like, this has to really count.
You're really listening. I got both of my hands clasped.
I did. It was on... I had a little Muslim prayer mat
somehow
that I got from the market, but then that's what I knelt on.
You even answered your prayer when you're on a Muslim prayer mat.
Yeah. But I would kneel beside my bed at night and just pray to God, like, just, okay, fine, you've taught me a lesson,
right.
I need you, then open the door,
okay.
Like, I'm yours, I'll do whatever you want.
Okay, so let's imagine there's a drum roll now.
Yeah.
So where was your third teaching job on the offer, where was it?
Tokyo, Japan.
Okay, so you go from northern Canada to some Indian reservation. Then you go to Kuwait, which is the most miserable planet in the world, where you're actually kneeling down on the ground and praying on a Muslim mat.
Yeah.
You know, begging out to God. And then God somehow says Tokyo.
Well, listen, so I'd gone to this job fair. I turned down all these jobs
okay.
in, like, Bahrain and Turkey and whatever. And then I put my resume on this website, okay. and I was, you know, shooting my resume off, and I hadn't really heard, you know, I heard back the, like, we'll consider right. you, or, but I hadn't really got any bites okay. yet, and then I got this, hey, we're really interested in you, can we set up a phone conversation, this is our school, okay. it's in Tokyo, Japan, okay. and I was like, Japan, I wasn't even really interested in Japan, but... So I had the interview. The interview went really well. It was an all-girls Catholic school.
Okay.
I Googled it. There was nothing. Like, I couldn't find it.
Nothing period or nothing negative?
It was the school's website, okay. but I couldn't find any teacher reviews okay. or any, like, you know, in lots of schools you can find teacher reviews. And I thought maybe this school is, like, in the basement of
right.
some, you know, office building. I didn't know. But my mom, I talked with my mom, and she said, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I've been on my knees every night praying to God
right.
to open a door, to show me a path. Like, I've surrendered and
right.
been like, okay, I'll listen.
Right.
And this is what's appeared. So I said,
I think
God would be upset if I didn't take this job.
So in Kuwait, what is the language, the primary language?
Arabic.
Arabic. You didn't speak Arabic.
No.
You do? Okay. So in Tokyo, what's the primary language?
Japanese.
Japanese.
Yeah.
Did you speak Japanese?
No. I was like, yeah.
See, this is what I like about you, because I couldn't do that. But you have this adventure. You were fulfilling a dream of yours of wanting to travel, and your parents traveled. So then, obviously, you didn't say goodbye to anybody when you... Did you go to Japan via Canada, or did you just from Kuwait to Canada?
I did go back to... So we had the summer holiday.
Okay,
you know.
So at least you went to
yeah.
visit family. So you land in...
Tokyo.
You've never been there before.
Right.
What were your first impressions?
I guess I was probably a little guarded because of my experience in Kuwait.
Okay. That's a big city.
Yeah, but it was really interesting. I was fascinated.
Yeah, because I hear it's like New York. I mean, it's just busy, 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 isn't it?
Yeah, and so beyond like the
okay.
initial impression, I guess was, there was a good energy. It was kind
okay.
of exciting, and.
So, did the bubble burst or did the bubble stay?
So interestingly enough, there's
okay.
a theme here.
All right. Yeah,
one of the new colleagues was interested in me.
Oh, really?
And I, you know.
Within a couple of years.
I'm
not.
Like magnetic. Right? No, it was another guy.
Yeah,
that guy.
You say, I can't help that.
Yeah,
for
I
can't help. That guy's attracted to me.
I think, you know what I think it really is?
What?
I think some young men go overseas hoping to...
Because
it's not working for them back home, so they change
and
the
environment. And there's a reason it's not working.
Right. Yeah, I mean, both guys really like them, so
okay.
he was interested in me, and I, again, was kind of like, just wait, man.
Yeah,
like, let me get to know
the
Japan first. Yeah. luckily, so I saw the pattern kind of repeating itself a little bit.
Right.
So very early on, I just was trying to make friends.
Right, right.
On my, you know.
You don't want to be excluded. You didn't know
right.
the guy that liked you probably owns the whole school for some unknown reason.
Right. And I guess, yes, luckily,
yeah.
he didn't have any
okay.
connections either. And
okay.
there were just four of us that were new. There were just four of us, this guy and then a couple.
Right.
And we all kind of got to know each other kind of well.
Right.
And he's a very nice guy. And so he, you know,
right.
the same kind of thing didn't happen. I didn't suddenly get excluded or whatever.
Right.
There was a bit
okay.
of awkwardness. But then also, you know, like Tokyo, because, I mean, so very different than Kuwait, right? Like Tokyo's got great nightlife
yeah.
and things to do, right? So... You know, you could easily just, like, go to a bar or
right.
a nightclub or a dance club or a comedy show or an art gallery, whereas
right.
Kuwait didn't have that same option. And
oh,
in
course.
Kuwait, you know, I needed a car. In Tokyo, you just hop on the train
right.
and you could... It was very easy to meet people.
When you went to Tokyo and didn't speak the language, could you get around pretty well not speaking the language? I mean, you're not reading signs. I'm assuming you can't read the signs.
I mean, every first year teacher trades stories of how miserably lost they got and stuff like that, but yeah, there were many of those moments.
Because I would assume, like, I'm not even sure if I'm on the right subway. I'm not sure if I'm on the right train.
That happened. But people in Japan are nice, and there's, like, low crime. And
so then you found a church.
So I found a church. Again, it took me a couple of months. I don't know why, but it just did.
All right.
Again, it was around Christmas time that I started thinking...
There's a pattern, too.
Yes.
Christmas time, you get kind of a church.
Yeah. That I wanted to go back to a church, or I wanted to go to a church, and so I just Googled churches, and I found one that I recognized the street name.
Okay.
I knew that street name,
What's the street name?
Omotesando.
See, I couldn't...
It's a very popular shopping street, and I knew it wasn't very far.
So it was a busy street.
Yeah, busy street, popular shopping street.
Okay.
So I recognized the name, and I knew that I could get in a taxi cab and tell that address. So I got in a taxi cab and told that address, and...
You definitely have goods.
Yeah.
You definitely have goods. So is this... Now, instead of a guy liking you, you begin to like a guy. Would that go?
Yeah. So when Matt came as an associate pastor, I'd been there for a couple years already.
Now, Matt is, what race is Matt?
American.
Yeah. So he was, if you listen to the podcast last month of Matt Harden. I know Matt Hannaford. Matt Harden. You can hear his story. Mm-hmm. So you can hear his version on how he met Mary. So anyway, so you started going to his church?
No. Okay. So it was my church first. That's an important distinction. It was my church first.
Okay.
So I had already been, by the time Matt showed up, I'd already been there for a couple years.
Okay. Oh, really?
I'd been attending the church. I, interestingly, wasn't a member yet because I have some commitment issues.
Well, don't everybody. Shoot, I got to deal with that all the time.
Yeah. So I didn't join as a member, but I was going to the church regularly. And then Matt came as a new associate pastor.
Okay.
And it was kind of funny.
Do you remember seeing him for the first time?
Yeah.
Was he cute?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was for a pastor.
For a pastor? What's that saying about me?
Not you particularly, Kevin, but...
That's funny. Okay.
I'm used to, like, very old men pastors.
Very old men pastors. So this is a young guy... Coming in as an associate pastor.
Yeah.
Okay, and you noticed him. Okay.
So, by this time, I had a good group of friends. Like, we were all kind of in our late 20s, early 30s, single. We did a lot of things together. Right. A bunch of girls, a couple guys. And we were all kind of joking before Matt even came because there was a lot of single Japanese women in the church.
Okay.
And
that like Matt?
Well, he had an article in the church magazine. There was an article interviewing him in the church magazine before he arrived.
Oh, really?
And we were all kind of laughing amongst ourselves. We were like, oh, look at all, you know, I'm sure all the Japanese girls are kind of so excited, right? Salivating over him. Can't wait to meet Pastor Matt. And, you know, so when we met, one of my girlfriends swears that when I started talking to him, my voice went up a pitch. She told me that after, and I was like, no. I mean, he's cute, and he's nice, but like, he's a pastor. Right. Come on, I'm not interested in him.
Well, and the thing is, that's what we have against ourselves, because nobody wants to be married to a pastor.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't, like, I guess, even before marriage, like...
Right.
Do pastors date? I don't know. I never
pastors
considered
like
that.
Anyone?
I never considered, like, you never hear, like, pastor's girlfriend. Like, that sounds weird.
Girlfriend.
So, the like, long story short is that we hung out as a big group a couple of times, and then within 3 months, every single one of my friends left.
Oh, really?
And that's the downside... Kind of a positive, but also the downside of living internationally is people aren't there for life. So, I had three girlfriends and two guy friends that all left within 3 months.
Wow.
They all got job offers somewhere else or called back by their companies or whatever. So, and then I went back to Canada for the summer holiday and I came back for the beginning of the school year.
Right.
And it was just me and Matt left. And the joke was before they all left was like, you know, oh, Pastor Matt, look out for Mary. Keep an eye on her. Yeah. You know, she can be a little crazy. You know, keep an eye on her for us. And then the joke to me was, Mary, look out for Pastor Matt.
Yeah.
Protect him from those Japanese girls, you know. So we had that joke amongst our group. And when I came back, Matt reached out and was like, hey, I'm going to this event. Do you want to come? And I was like, sure.
That's a good line. I like that one. Yeah. I went to this event.
And so I said, sure. And I remember going to meet him. And I didn't think anything of it until I was on the train to go meet him. It suddenly occurred to me that, like, oh, maybe this is kind of like a date. Okay. And that was kind of weird. And then I remember seeing him and thinking, ow, he's good looking. And I was suddenly just seeing him in a new light. Now, it took a long time for me to be comfortable even calling him my boyfriend. And I think...
Because that's weird, calling him Pastor your boyfriend.
Yeah, it was really weird. And there was a little, I suppose, strangeness too, because like, how do we act with each other at church? And to me, there were a lot of unanswered questions. And Matt was kind of like, why does it matter? And I'm like, I don't know, because...
That's true, because Jennifer and I, we didn't let people know that we were dating.
Right.
Yeah, we just... Because you're right, because, you know, we were a really, really, really small church then. And you just don't say, by the way. And my big fear is what happens when we break up.
Right.
And I'm the pastor. She better leave the church. I don't think you would have left the church.
We did break up.
You did?
Yeah. And I didn't leave the church.
See,
it was my church first. I told you.
See, the thing is, because you all say it, I'm stubborn, I'm hard headed.
Yes.
See, you would have been my worst nightmare. Because that's all I need. We broke up, and she still comes to the church, and I'd be on that platform, and her sitting there. You know, was that awkward for you guys?
Yes, terribly, but. But
so,
I'm stubborn.
So
I like that church.
How long were you are stubborn? And you were there 2 years before him.
Yeah,
right?
3 years.
Before him.
Yeah.
So how long was that awkward breaking up? Yeah, eventually got together, right?
So we were together, and then things... like I said, it was hard for me, and then things got too intense too fast for me.
Right.
Like... You know, where he was like, I want to spend the rest of my life with you. I want to get married.
Oh, he just threw her out there.
Yeah.
Huh?
And I was like,
wouldn't that come across like needy?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I
felt that way when I dated Jennifer. I wasn't verbal with it.
I understand, you know, now after we've unpacked all of it, I understand why. As I told you before, I mean, that's one of the downsides of living internationally is people can be gone in a second. And, you know, we had a lot of good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he was a bit worried that could maybe just suddenly take a teaching job somewhere else. And he had, you know, he was on a year or 6 months contract review too.
Okay.
So I understand why he kind of rushed the issue a little bit, but there was other stuff happening in my life at the time, and it was too much, and I said I just need a break, and you know, he was like, no, we're either together or we're not, and I was like, well then we have to be not together because I can't handle this.
Okay.
And
is this the same commitment issue that you had with the church?
Yeah,
totally commitment issue. Period.
I have commitment issue. Yeah. And yeah. So does he.
I have commitment issues.
Yeah. Like, no, we talked about that.
That's funny.
Commitment issues. So yeah, we broke up and. I kept going to the church, and he was obviously still there, and that was hard. And I think there was hurt feelings on both sides.
Right.
Like, you know, obviously he was hurt because I broke up with him, but I was also hurt too because I felt like you know, he pushed me into something I wasn't ready for, right. And I had told him that, yeah. And, you know, so there was hurt feelings on both sides, but we're both stubborn.
Yeah. Well, I know that.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
And
that's why you guys work well together, because you both are hard-headed.
And so we knew a lot about each other, so there was, you know, whatever it was, maybe, I don't know, 6 months or something like that, where we saw each other at church, and it was just the polite, like,
right.
Hello.
So when did you get married? Well, you obviously know the date.
Yeah, 2013. So basically, because we still knew each other, then, you know, slowly we started talking again.
Right.
And I think we kind of discovered that we still really cared about each other. And I think we discovered in starting to talk again that both of us had done some growing in the time period. So it was probably 2 years that we were apart, but still.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
2 years.
Mm-hmm.
See, to me, Jennifer and I, we started dating in January, we were engaged in June and married in March.
Wow.
I mean, real quick.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, if it's longer than that, somebody has a commitment issue. So anyway, but eventually it happened that you guys got together, courted.
Yeah, so it kind of, I think it was really a God thing where, you know, I was dating someone else and I was I looked forward to talking to Matt on Sundays and I got involved in the church. I was the elder for the Mission and Outreach Committee. So I was at the church a bit more often. And I looked forward to talking to him, but I guess I just had not ever thought that we could, it wasn't going to work.
Right.
And I was dating someone else, and he then very suddenly got transferred back to New York. Mm-hmm. And we were... You know, but we were just early stages dating, and he was kind of like, well, why don't you come to New York? Come teach in New York. And I was like, yeah, maybe I should. And at this time, I'd been in Japan for 7 years or something, and things weren't going anywhere really in my love life anyway. So I was like, yeah, maybe I should. Maybe I should give it a shot. Yeah. You know, what's to lose? And I was gone for the summer holidays, and I came back, and I remember coming back and coming to church that following Sunday and seeing Matt and just kind of having this, like, you know, physical, like...
Attraction.
Okay. Yeah, just, like, kind of... Like, I was looking forward to talking to him about my summer.
Yeah.
And I also had this feeling of, like, kind of welcome home in Japan. Like, this was my home. Mm-hmm. And so... For probably a month and a half or so, I kind of thought that, like, no, I'm not attracted to him. And I remember sitting in a meeting once, and I just had this desire to, like, put my hand on his knee. And I, like, have to, like, hold my hand down, and I'm like, what is happening? And then finally, I just kind of had to swallow my pride a little bit. And I said to him, like, do you want to have dinner? And he said, yes. And And then I felt like I had to be like, well, but if you're busy, it's okay, you know. And then we went to dinner and talked for about an hour. And he said to me, he said, you know, this is really nice. And I've missed talking to you like this. And I said, yeah, this is really nice. And I wasn't sure if we could do this again. And, you know, I said, I wasn't sure if I should ask you because of our history. And he said, yeah, maybe you shouldn't have. And and then, you know, that allowed us then to start hashing out our history. And I think once we started hashing it out, we worked past that pain. And, you know, I said, you know, I was able to say I was hurt because of this. He was able to say I was hurt because of this. And both of us, I think, were, like I said, able to swallow our pride and admit that maybe we'd made some mistakes. Mm-hmm. And then from that moment... things happened very quickly.
Right.
So that was probably November or something. And then I think that was November. Right. I think Matt got offered the job in LA here, maybe in March. And when he got offered the job, I said, you should take it. And he kind of looked at me and I was like, and I'll come with you. And he was like,
Oh, I bet that made his day.
Yeah. He was like, seriously? And I said, yeah, I'll do it. I'll come with you. And he said, you know what that means. Like, I'm a pastor. We can't live together. You know? And I was like, yeah. And I kind of, I guess, kind of jumped in. I mean, before, everything before this, I was like, I can't be a pastor's wife. Right. I can't be, you know, that's too much. I can't fill that role. Yeah. That's the expectations are too high. But in that moment, I just felt like, no, I love this guy.
Right.
We work well together. Absolutely. We fought, you know, I fought against being with him for so long.
Yeah.
It felt good to just give in and just kind of surrender and say, you know what, like, I feel like this is meant to be. God's been giving me all these messages that this is what I'm meant to do and be, and things will be okay.
So his position is at the Presbyterian Church in where?
Westwood Presbyterian.
His official title is Associate Pastor.
Associate Pastor.
You guys been, he's been there how long?
Almost 4 years, I guess.
4 years, okay.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it was interesting. Now you have this most beautiful child on the planet, and you think your child's the most beautiful child.
Of course.
And I agree too. Joshua is just beautiful. He's about a year old.
Yep.
He's about a year old. And so, going back on all your experiences, and you look back at your life and you go, you really can see in hindsight the faithfulness of God. You know, and stuff like that. From the low point of Kuwait, I wish a bus would hit me, to have this stubborn marriage, hard-headed marriage that is a joy, and you have a beautiful son, and you both are happy. You're teaching where now?
At Marlboro School.
Okay, it's a private school, correct?
Yeah.
Marlboro School. And so if you're giving advice to somebody, and while we wind the podcast down, you're giving advice to somebody that is in that position, I wish a bus would hit me, you know, because we get that position a lot where my relationships aren't going, my career's not, I've had these dreams and all of a sudden, is there any advice or anything you could say to somebody that's listening to the podcast that's going, I'm having a Kuwait experience?
I think so. During this time period, and I still have this, my roommate, who I had the tumultuous relationship, had a calendar that had famous quotes or sayings on it. And one month I happened to see was, if you're going through hell, keep going, Winston Churchill. And at one point, she's like, here, I think you might need this.
Going through hell, keep going.
Yeah, which I wasn't sure it was barbed
was
or not.
Was this a compliment? You're in hell.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, thanks. But I stacked that up over my bed, and I looked at that a lot and just kept thinking, like, okay, this is a dark time, but... Well, keep going. You know, like, I'm not going to sit still.
Right.
Just, like, sit and be stuck in hell. So I might as well just keep walking, keep going, and keep, like, whatever it was, like, keep reaching out, keep, and that, I guess some of the, some of the experiences, I think, have been, you know, just saying to that girl, like, hey, you go to church, you know, maybe I should join you sometime, and her saying, sure, come on, you know, here's my number, and then, like, just reaching out and choosing to go and give it a shot. And,
or just building a friendship.
Right. And like I think kind of all, I guess, maybe all through my life, it's just, you know, I know you said, like, oh, you're very adventurous or whatever, but just giving it a try, giving it a shot.
Yeah.
And one of my other favorite quotations that came to me around that same time was, I always mess it up, but something like, life is not measured by the number of breaths we take, but the number of moments that take our breath away.
Oh, that's cool.
And again, just, you know, I've had people tell me, like, a lot, you know, when I moved to Kuwait or this northern community, like, oh my God, it's so dangerous. Mm. You know, like, you should, you know, aren't you scared?
Right.
You know, I don't know if you should go.
Right.
And eventually I just kind of thought, you know, like, I don't want to look back at my life and see all these things I could have done,
right,
but I didn't because I was scared.
Right.
So instead, like I said, like just keep going. Just
yeah. Keep going.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, thank you so much, Mary. Anyway, if you're a part of our church, join us on Sundays at 10 o'clock or Saturdays. Matt and Mary come to our services at Saturday at 6 o'clock. And if you want to instigate a fight between them, just talk about baptism and baby dedications. It's so funny about theological stuff they still disagree with. But anyway, they're part of our church on Saturday evenings, and so join them. If this meant anything to you or while you listen to it, go up to Mary and tell her you really appreciate the podcast. So I will see you Sundays at 10 o'clock or Saturdays at 6 o'clock. God bless you. And remember, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. God bless. See you next week.